KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston, ESPN 97.5.
That's what we call ourselves, sort of like a team.
A Gao Media Station. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Travis Johnson, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel Blank, Travis Johnson, Nick Shirara behind the glass and giving us input and kicking ass. That's what we do. We've been talking about Charlie Strong, and we've been talking about Tom Herman, and we've been talking about the possible coaching carousel that is going to start playing Wheel of Fortune in college football, depending on where the dominoes may or may not land. And we've got some people that have been holding patiently, and we appreciate it. So without further ado, Scott and Clear Lake, you want to chime in on Charlie Strong and Tom Herman? Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Hey, so let's say Charlie's gone. Let's say Tom Herman's gone. What do y'all think of Charlie Strong coming to Houston?
I thought about it.
First thought is it's a similar job to what he had at Louisville. I don't think Art Briles would be coming back. I don't think the people at U of H would have him back. But Charlie Strong with maybe Major Applewhite as his offensive coordinator.
Now, here's the other thing, and it's a great call, Scott. It's a great question. First of all, I wouldn't be so surprised. I brought this up on this show before, that I thought that U of H might consider Briles back here in Houston.
Uh-huh.
So I wouldn't rule that completely out. But the other question then becomes, wherever Tom Herman goes, who does he take with him? Because if you could maintain both coordinators, then you could maintain some stability in keeping a Tom Herman-like program. But I got to believe those guys are going to be paid even better to go with him wherever he goes, they get the head job.
Exactly. Unless you get the head coaching job, you're not – nobody's staying here.
Right. So then I did think about Charlie Strong, but then Travis, to a conversation that we've had in the past,
I don't think recruiting.
I don't think he could – I don't think Charlie Strong could get in the living rooms of the people, especially in this city, the way he needs to maintain what Tom Herman started building at U of H.
Well, I think because he's been here for the 3 years, I think he can get in the living room if he puts together the right staff once again. I think he's so deeply rooted in the state of Florida, it wouldn't surprise me if I don't know what Florida State's going to do with our D coordinator, but if they happen to get rid of our defensive coordinator, if we wouldn't try to go after him because of he's a dog in the recruiting room, especially when it comes to the state of Florida.
Yeah, I mean, I think more than anything else, the key to the U of H job is recruiting, one, and then two, having the coordinators to put the right system in place to best suit the talent that you have already committed to the University of Houston. Mm-hmm. Because there's obviously athletes, there's obviously players, right? But it's a matter of maintaining there's a term for it, but it's
cohesiveness.
No, it's maintaining that carousel of quality players that keep coming to your program that you can continue to rely on, so that you can continue to build the appropriate systems and do the appropriate things that you want to do to be competitive in college football. So I hope, whether it's with Tom Herman or without, I hope there's a way. So I hope that there's a way they can work it all out, and that I hope there's a way that U of H maintains the momentum they've been building. I'm just very, very worried that there's not a whole lot of ways to find a means to the end there.
Well, there's still no guarantee that he's going to leave.
And I agree.
That's the biggest thing.
I hear you.
And we don't know if I know Lisa mentioned that he was 41. You know what I mean? But I don't see us who knows if he's not – he might not even be ready to take – remember when Lisa was talking about he's 41 years old.
I understand.
You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, he might still look at his eye. He don't know if he's ready for that big of a job, or he doesn't know if he's ready for
– I think he's ready, and I think he feels like he's – I think any coach feels like they're ready, whether they are or not. But I think, to your point, I see it more like, look, I know the opportunities are there, and I could if I wanted to, but I might make a bigger statement if I stayed and was able to maintain and continue to do the things that I'm doing here. The only way that I think that all that becomes possible is if the money is close to equal. That's why I said the alums are going to have to dig into the purse strings if they really want to keep them there.
And unless you got one of these billionaires,
Tillman's, you got Tillman Fertitta.
But outside of – and but what what perks does it give Tillman to say, I'm going to give this guy $10 million? Like, there's no real perks for in it for him. So why would he? I mean, he's a billionaire because he doesn't give away $10 million.
Well, but, I mean, there's certain things that you just like, and I hate.
I could be a billionaire right now, and somebody said, "Hey, we need $10 million bucks for a job."
I hate to bring in the Red McCombs element. Red McCombs has got a ton of money like that too, and he doesn't give it away. But for UT, he does.
Yeah.
You know, some guys just pick their poison. You know, whether it's the charity that I really believe in, or you know, this group or that group. You say that, you know, they're careful with it, but if there's something that's close and near and dear to their heart, they will. So let's continue the dialogue. Let's go next to Jonathan in Houston, who wants to talk about the carousel. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. I mean, y'all touched it at the very end. I honestly do not think that Coach Herman would leave Houston. I feel that he has not given off that vibe. If anything, I feel that he does what Art Briles does. You know, Art Briles stayed here for a while, built up that program, you know, believe, you know, with Kevin Cobb and everything as a quarterback, the U of H did great. And then he went to Baylor, and he, you know, Baylor was nothing before him, and he put Baylor on the map. You know, he was there for, what, 6-7 seasons when, you know, right after RG3 left, he could have gone to another bigger program like the UT, like one of these big-name programs in all of college football. And he decided, you know, I'm going to stay there, and I'm going to build something. And yeah, he had the whole fallout and everything, but had that not the scandal not happened, Art Briles would be one of the hottest names out there for whether it be UT, LSU, or anything like that. And I feel that Coach Herman has not given off any indication wanting to leave.
You know what that means? That means he's a hell of a poker player.
Well, here's the thing is, Art Briles didn't leave Baylor because he didn't have a bunch of other opportunities. Art Briles didn't leave Baylor because Baylor is a good school. Baylor is a powerhouse school for the most part. That's why they're in the Power Five. Once he got them out of that funk that Baylor's been in for the last 20 years, then it became a relevant job again. So there was no point for him to leave. U of H and Baylor are not on the same level. Baylor has a bunch more money than U of H has.
Yeah, big time. So it's a lot more big-time donors.
No question. So it's not even – that's not even – I mean, Jonathan, it was a decent call, but your points were all moot points.
Jonathan, we appreciate the call, man. Don't be a stranger. You can continue to contribute. Don't listen to everything Travis says. Mark, welcome to the show. What do you got, my man?
How you doing, fellas? When Tom Herman leaves to take a bigger job at a Power Five school, now I don't want to see Charlie Strong come down, because if you look at the players that Tom Herman was able to put together and peel away from other big schools, those are the same type of kids. If you look at their backgrounds, Charlie Strong was getting rid of at UC. So a lot of these players see that, you know. And in Houston, you really, just like Tom Herman did, you got to be immersed in the culture of Houston, and we've seen Tom Herman do it. My thing is, Charlie Strong, I don't think, is the type of guy who would do that, and I don't think he would be the kind of guy that could sit in Houston players' living room and convince them that, hey, I've changed the way I see football and football players. You know, you're the type of guys I want now after, you know, losing out at UC.
Here's the thing is, I don't think that it has anything to do with, I mean, what's the guys that he kicked off the team were guys who weren't following the rules. You either follow the rules or you don't follow. I mean, when you come in and you are taking over a team, and the first thing guys want to do, if guys don't want to buy in, the first thing they want to do is buck the system.
And, okay, but I think what Mark is saying is there's two different styles, yeah, right? Like, I think Tom Herman, for the most part, is a disciplinarian, but I think he has flexibility. I think from what we've seen, we don't know for sure, Charlie Strong came in with the iron fist, and it's my way or the highway.
But
at UT.
But Nick Saban does it. Jimbo Fisher does it. Like, you have to do that, especially when you take over a program.
But do you not agree that Tom Herman, he comes in with that kind of mentality, but I think he's also a little lenient sometimes. He'll be flexible.
But that's one of the reasons why you got guys like Sumlin, who will continue to be on the hot seat for the next year or so because of his flexibility, because he allowed guys like Johnny Manziel to come in there, do what he wanted to. He allowed guys like Kenny Trill to come through and do what he wanted to. And it continued. That right there is what deteriorates your program. That right there works. And I promise you, when right now it helps when you're at a program like U of H, yeah, okay, how much are you really competing for? You know what I mean? But when you get to a bigger program, you got a lot more on the line. I promise you he's gonna straighten up and fly right when it comes to some of that stuff.
Robert, you're next up. What's up?
Hey, guys.
What's
Travis,
going on?
I am a lifelong FSU fan, so it's great to have a Florida State guy on in Houston radio. Oh, so I really appreciate
you saying that.
So, speaking of Florida State, I got two questions for you.
Yep.
Do you think Jimbo's going to fire Charles Kelly? Because, I don't know. I mean, you look at what Jeremy Pruitt did. He's changed the scheme like three times in our championship year. And it just seems like Charles Kelly is just stuck on one mode of defense, and he doesn't seem to be dynamic whatsoever. I think Jalen Ramsey and Derwin James covered up his inadequacies, and honestly, I think it's time for him to go. What do you think?
I never call for anybody to get fired, to be honest with you. But I mean, I think it's something you have to look into, Robert. And I appreciate the call. I think it's something you got to look into and think about. I think you got to go back to the basics of the defense. I think when you realize we have greater athletes and better athletes than most of these other schools, you got to go to the man-to-man concept. You got to take out all of the thinking that some of these kids have to do, because right now it seems like their football IQ is not where it needs to be. So, I mean, based on that, I can't give you a definitive answer, but I would say he probably leaning on not getting rid of him, you know, right now, but we'll see.
Hey, glad we got that out of the way. Adam, we saw you. You left us. Come back. We need you back on the show. We want to talk more with you and everybody else. If you want to join in on the conversation, we can continue to talk about Tom Herman, but we've got about 45 minutes left in the show. It's time to change gears again and also talk about the Houston Texans, but we can finish up Tom Herman if you'd like. It's your show, your way, this week anyway, or at least today. 713-780-ESPN, or you can hit us up on Twitter. We're here till 4 o'clock. It's Travis, it's Nick, it's Joel, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Travis Johnson, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
All right, we got two in the books, one to go. We are having a pretty good show. We're rolling along, having some fun, talking about some college football, about to get to pro football. Before we do that, Quentin, you want to get in on this Tom Herman discussion? Welcome to the show. What's up, man?
All right, how y'all doing?
All right.
I was trying to see, you know, I was trying to get in on a Charlie Strong about Texas. He seems like he does everything right, and, you know, like, he wanted Louisville in Florida. I'm trying to see, what do you guys think about that situation? Like, why aren't the wins coming, you know, and the players love him, you know, how they reacted last Saturday after the loss?
It's a conversation, Travis, you and I have had in the past, and I said for as well, and it's similar to Kevin Sumlin, you can recruit your tail off, but you can't recruit the most important position on the field.
Quarterback.
Yep. And when you can't get a quarterback, it's hard to win in college football. It's hard to win anywhere, as the Texans are finding out. But if you can't get the right quarterback for your program, LSU will tell you this. Texas A&M can tell you this. You can try and, you know, retread like they did with Knight at A&M, and it worked short term, but they do the same thing they do every year, and they peter out down the stretch. But Texas's biggest problem, dare I say, where you go all the way back to Colt McCoy, I can't. After Vince Young, you did get Colt McCoy. That was about it. Applewhite and McCoy and Vince Young are the three. So as much as you get all this, you have to get a quarterback. And I don't know why it is that in Texas's case, they can't get one and they can't get the right one. In A&M's case, they can get five of them and they can't keep them.
Wasn't Chris Sims was a Texas quarterback, wasn't he?
He went there for a short period of time. No, Chris Sims.
Yeah, Chris Sims was there. So, it was because Chris Sims took the job from Major Applewhite.
Okay, but regardless, it's been a while.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, the shortcoming of Mac Brown at the end amongst all of his other recruiting woes.
That was because he let guys like Johnny Manziel, like Jameis Winston, guys that wanted to come there.
He wanted to make Johnny Manziel a D-back.
Well, it doesn't work that way.
Right. But to answer his question,
why
is Charlie Strong not successful? Because he's doing everything else right. I just think it's because he can't get a quarterback.
Because the thing is, their freshman quarterback is pretty good. I think, but he's still a freshman. Right. I think when he was never the man for the job because they didn't want him from the beginning. So that was an issue where you're fighting an uphill battle So if it was a guy that they wanted, they wouldn't even blink twice about giving him more time until he got the way.
That's a great point you made prior to this in terms of the struggles of Charlie Strong. He's had to dig out from the Mack Brown hole,
yeah,
from a lack of recruiting from and some of the one. Things he's done that set him back. That's why when you hired Charlie Strong, you should have right from the get-go figured out it was going to take 5 years.
Not only that, but then it was going to take you 5 years, four at the least. Then you had an AD who was dang near robbing the program with raising ticket prices and never on the same page with everybody else in the university. So they fire him along with a bunch of other people. So it's like it's almost like having different offensive coordinators. When you come and take a job and you have one AD, and all of a sudden the AD is not friendly to the university, and they get rid of him. It's been an uphill battle from day one for Charlie Strong, and I know for him, he's probably like, man, y'all hurry up and fire me. Send my check back to Florida. Thank you. You know what I'm saying? I'll take it. I'm gonna go to my house, and I'm gonna get out of here because it was a job. It's like when Tyrone Willingham took the Notre Dame job.
Mm-hmm.
It was a ticking time bomb from the day you walked in the building.
But the problem is, Trap, is I understand the sex appeal and the luster. And everybody says it's UT, you got to take that job. But you mentioned Ty Willingham. That was the beginning of the end for Ty Willingham. Because he was set up to fail at Notre Dame. He fails at Notre Dame. He goes to Washington. He never does anything. And he falls off the planet.
Yeah.
No, he's no longer even coaching.
But he's on the playoff staff.
Do you worry about Charlie Strong in another job?
No, I don't. I mean, here's the thing. As a black coach, you don't have too many opportunities to take head coaching jobs. So you have to take the ones when they're offered to you. You have to take the ones, period. And for Charlie Strong, it was the perfect opportunity. He couldn't say no. You can't say no to upward mobility from schools.
That's a big-time gig. I agree with you. You can't say no, but at the same time.
He's going to get another job. Charlie Strong is a defensive-minded genius. He will get another job. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's, hey, you took your lumps and you keep on moving. You know what I mean? That's all you can say.
Well, and the other thing is regardless of taking your lumps, your bank account did grow exponentially.
Exponentially. And then it's going to grow another $10.7 million when they cut this check.
Yeah. So, you know, you don't feel sorry for Charlie Strong. I just want to make sure that the man ends up with another gig because of the fact that he was set up to fail.
He
was put in a position that was going to be very difficult to succeed if you didn't give the man a full 5 years.
Yep.
So, I mean, let's leave it at that and see what else we got. Mike wants to talk about, and yes, I know, OU Mike, wants to talk about Charlie Strong. Mike, what's up?
Fellas, it's just about the wins. That's what it is. If you give the guy 5 years and then 5 years, you're losing the slippery rock.
But Mike hasn't had 5 years.
Huh?
He hasn't had 5 years.
Yeah, he hasn't. You're not winning either. You're like, okay, this is a 3 year dip. We're going to get our recruiting in and get our classes in.
But you got to.
Like Stab said, finding the right quarterback, they walked through here. You see them on them other teams winning big. So
no, them other teams ain't winning like that, and that's the thing. Oh, you Mike, is the fact is that listen, they haven't given him the opportunity to win games. They haven't given him the opportunity to not be looking over his shoulder from the day he walked in the building. And Red McCombs said, "Oh, he makes a good good coordinator, but you know that boy don't. You know, I wouldn't have gave him the head coaching job. That was set up to fail from the beginning." And if you're gonna allow me to recruit my classes, you have to allow me for my classes to grow up and become a team that I can use and that I can take the field with in order to get better. At the end of the day, is you can't say, oh well, we gave him 2 years, 2.5 years, and he didn't get the job done. Mack Brown had been losing for a long time at that point.
Yeah, I mean that's why I said, look, I'm the one that said. You just can't get a quarterback.
Exactly.
But it takes time, just like everything else. And if you're also digging out from Mack Brown's situation that he left you with and a lot of different variables, he hasn't had 5 years. If you gave him 5 years, then you'd be at least saying that you did your part to make sure that he had every opportunity to succeed. But if you're not going to give him the 5 years, then it, in that program, the way it was set up for him when he took the deal, it was going to be hard to succeed. Fair enough?
Yeah.
All right. So we got that out of the way, and now we're going to switch gears and get into the game that everybody wants to talk about tonight, because it's a big one. It's the Raiders, who are the upstart team with at least one player that, I would say two players, that if they were wearing the other team's uniform, would be the talk of the town and maybe have the Texans in a situation to be one of the predominant teams in the AFC. But instead, they're playing for the opponent, and that opponent is one to be reckoned with for not only the Texans tonight, but the rest of the league based on how they're playing and have been playing all season long. We'll talk about that next, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Travis Johnson, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Hey, it's Joel, it's Travis, it's Nick, and we've transitioned from Tom Herman, from oxtails and turkey and favorite Thanksgiving foods, to the big game tonight. Travis, you and I, also non-organically, have been speaking in detail for the last 24 hours about this game tonight between the Texans and the Oakland Raiders. I said to you, and again, injuries factoring in, because Cooper's not 100%. The running game for the Raiders is nicked up as well. The biggest factor in this game could be your boy, Sebastian Janikowski, and with a lot of things into consideration here, including soccer players saying this is the worst field that any organized team could play on, whether it be professional sports, Olympic sports, you know, the United States national soccer team, whatever it is. So the field's not great. Highest altitude that anybody in the NFL is probably going to play in professionally in a real game. He could bang a 74-yarder tonight, and I'm not exaggerating, and you can back me up. He's that good, has that strong of a leg, and with altitude like that, that literally could factor in. You could see, if it is a close game, you could see a final drive where they just decide 4 seconds left, give Seabass a chance to bang one home from behind midfield, and he could do it.
And I always tell the story when people ask me about how big of a leg does he have. And one, he's a Florida State guy, so I always, I'm looking forward to the things that he does. But I remember we played Oakland in 2000 and I want to say 2007 or 2008, one of those years. And it was going into the half and they were literally 70 yards away from a field goal. And they lined up and we're sitting there like, they're not really about to kick this. You know what I mean? And we gave a little, we gave a half-ass rush and was like, there, you know, let's not block it because, you know, we want to actually see if he's going to get it there. Or, and I don't want to put my hand up and get a finger broke coming off his foot because he's going to put a real boot to it. And the thing hit the top of the upright.
The top.
The top.
Not the crossbar.
The top of the upright. And it lit, like, it was the craziest thing I've ever seen. And not, but let's not just mention, I mean, you mentioned Sebastian. But let's look at the fact is that all the kickers in this game have a chance to be a factor in this game. When you look at Shane Leckler.
Leckler's a hell of a player.
And then not just that, on the other side, you look at was it King?
Or King. Sorry, yeah, King. Yeah.
So you look at King, and he has a nice leg on him. Then you
he's a heck of a punter, too.
You know, and then you look at our side, and you see Novak. Novak is normally a 50 to 54-yard field goal kicker. Mm-hmm. But with that elevation, he might be able to pop a 60-yarder out. Yeah. You know, so I think those are all factors. The kicking game, like you said, is going to be a big factor in this game. Yep. And I think it comes from both punters and both field goal kickers.
So it's going to be interesting to see that. The other thing that I teased a while back that it's worth talking about, but, you know, one of the stories, and I know that David Carr has been interviewed time and time again about his brother and the Raiders versus the team that could have drafted his brother and that he played for. And, you know, was he not, was Derek Carr not drafted here because of his last name, which we've already chronicled that we believe it was the only reason why he wasn't drafted here was because of his last name. But you look at the fact that they could have had him and they didn't. And then you look at Suofilo, the fact that, you know, they took him instead.
And did you hear Derek say the Texans never spoke to him?
Yeah, and then there's some back and forth about, well, they might have talked to him. Look, I mean, the guy's not going to lie. I think that there's more truth to it when it's come from the actual kid, because as you can attest to, when teams are talking to you and you're coming out of school, you remember, because it's no matter who talks to you, it's a pretty cool thing to have another franchise that wants you.
No question.
Okay, and so here's the other thing. As good or bad or otherwise as you might feel the number one pick in the entire draft has been for the Texans over the history of their franchise, the one guy that they did not pick because, of course, he went to the University of Buffalo, they didn't think he played enough big-time schools, they didn't think they had enough real tape against real competition for him, and they decided that he wasn't their guy, even though when he played Ohio State with tape that they did have on him, he destroyed the Buckeyes his final year at the University of Buffalo. That guy's going to be lining up against you tonight, too, because Khalil Mack is a real man.
Oh, I trained Khalil getting ready for the draft, so I know.
He is one hell of a football player.
No question.
And if you could imagine what life would be like for Texans fans based on all the trials and tribulations you've been through recently and in the last couple of years, if you could have switched places in that regard and you would have Derek Carr quarterbacking your team tonight and you could have Khalil Mack playing the other side of the line of scrimmage for you tonight, might make a hell of a difference, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, might.
I'm just trying to be diplomatic.
I mean, that is a quarterback that you know is going to make some plays. That's a quarterback who's like those two people alone with Khalil and Derek, and then you throw in Amari Cooper, have completely elevated that franchise.
Without question. And look, the running game's helped. Latavius Murray has helped.
It has.
Right? And he's a big back, too. He's a big punisher, but he's got shifty speed. But let me ask you this. Could you see differences enough to say Derek was nothing like David? Because they both have big arms.
But here's the thing. Here's what you got to factor in is the fact that he grew up in this facility. So from the time he was a kid and David was here, mm-hmm. he was at practice every day.
Right. So was his dad, which was a huge problem.
And that was the problem. But I mean, yeah, it's... Derek was here every day. He got to learn all the things. He got to learn like a pro, but then he got to also see his brother make the mistakes that he made so he could learn from those as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to factor that into saying, how many kids do you have the opportunity to draft that grew up in your building?
Right.
That grew up coming to your facility.
Okay, but answer the initial question I gave you, though. Could you see?
Yes. That he's way better than Derek.
And here's
the thing. David was not a bad quarterback.
No, I was going to say, coming out of the draft,
he
was athletic, and he could throw a deep ball like nobody's business.
And not even just come out of the draft. Before David started getting beat up on, you got to remember, David's last year here was probably his best year here. Yeah, we did a lot of dinking and dunking, and it was his first year with Kubiak and all those things. But David was a dang good quarterback, except for the fact that his head got bad when he started taking a beating. And that's just the only thing. If I come in this room and I slap the taste out of freaking Nick's mouth every single day when I walk in here, if I literally walk in here and say, I'm just going to slap Nick just to slap Nick, Nick is going to start jumping left and right every time I walk in here.
I don't think people understand what it's like when we talk about the mental clock and the whole, you know, you got a mental clock that says 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, I better unload it. It got so bad, David was like 1,000, and he was happy, beat, ready to go.
Because I saw Dwight Freeney. Dwight Freeney got a sack on a now route. And I don't think you understand what a now route is. Like, take the snap,
and as open soon up, as you get it,
open
let it
up,
go.
Let it go to the receiver. Like, we used to throw them those little now routes to Andre all the time. Andre used to just jump back, boom, catch the ball, and get 10 quick yards.
It was just yak after that.
I saw Dwight Freeney get a sack on one of those plays. I saw Dwight Freeney also get a quarterback knockdown on one of those plays. You know how hard that is? You basically had to not touch him at all.
Here's my thing. I know people, and I'm sure you do too, obviously, that were in meeting rooms with him near the end of his Texans career that said there was no business having an audible meeting, no business at all having any kind of meeting that concerned anything about what to do after the initial play fell apart, because of the fact that you could see in his eyes and you knew in his heart and his head, the minute that the initial play was not going to be there, he was either going to throw it out of bounds or he was going to head for the hills, because he was just that tainted at that point. He was damaged goods.
He was, but his brother wasn't.
And that's the thing. I mean, you and I have both been in total agreement that the one and only reason why, and you can hear people on other stations and you can hear the so-called experts and the general say that's never true and that there's no way that they would pass on him just because of his last name. I'm telling you right now, bottom line is, and you and I both know people and you know more than me, but we both have agreed, the only reason that kid wasn't drafted here, and they basically can say they did it for his own good, well, was because of his last name.
Yeah, and I think it worked, and I think for both of them it probably worked out, because I think if he would have been successful, they would look like geniuses. But if he wouldn't have been successful, because right now, to be honest with you, the team's really not too much different outside of a defense than it was when David was here. Offensive line is still suspect.
I think to your point, though, the biggest thing is there was a ton more downside than there was upside, because of the fact that anytime he made any little mistake, and as a young player in this league, you know they were going
to
happen.
Compared to his brother.
They would have compared. They would have said, here we go again. There would have been a backlash. There would have been a huge media outcry. Way farther worse than what you're seeing with Brock Osweiler. So it might be to your point and be dead on. It worked out best for both sides that it didn't happen. Not that it's worked out better for the Texans at the quarterback position, but because they didn't have to deal with all that sideshow. But for Derek Carr, it couldn't have worked out any better, because he's in a great spot. He's close to home, and he's doing the things that everybody said he could do when he came out of college, exactly. And he's got people around him. So it sets up an interesting proposition. The altitude factors in, the field factors in, all these different things factors in. But at the end of the day, both teams have to play the game on the same field, under the same conditions, doing the same things. So with all that being said, we'll break it down like a mother when we get back, and we'll give you our expert opinions and what we think and how we think this whole thing plays out. ESPN 97.5.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Travis Johnson, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Hey, we're back with one segment left to go. We've got a little bit of extra breakdown for you in the Texans-Raiders game, so check on Twitter, check on the ESPN 97.5 tweets, the ESPN 97.5 Facebook account, I believe, Nick. And everybody can see that video with Trap and I, and put faces with names and such, and then make sure that you become loyal listeners like the rest of the free world will be by the end of the year, at least the end of next year, as we continue to build this thing and people continue to come. But before the break, we were talking about this game tonight. It's interesting because you said something to me when we were doing the video that's funny. I always refer to Brock Osweiler as B.O., and there's good B.O. and bad B.O., and a lot so far he's been bad B.O.
Yeah.
And I hope, for the sake of a good football game, for the sake of all the Texans fans that have had to endure so much quarterback crap over the history of their franchise, with the exception, as we say, of 4 or 5 years of good play from Matt Schaub that gets forgotten a lot of times, I hope that he can break out of this. I hope. You know, it's funny. I was watching a lot of games this weekend in which they were first of all, Jared Goff was getting picked apart because it was his first game ever. Right.
And he still had a chance to.
And he actually had no business losing that game for the most part. He played well enough to win. I watched Carson Wentz. I watched some of the guys that have been scrutinized recently about slumping or having problems. Blake Bortles, other guys. And I watched Rodgers, obviously, last night, who broke out of it. And you know that everything with Aaron has to do with off the field, not on the field. But you watch a guy across the field from him that has basically stepped up and backed up everything. But the one thing that I noticed of every single piece of video that I watched and every game that I watched as it was unfolding was everybody has the ability to look off. Kirk Cousins, time and time again last night, with as bad as the Packers secondary was looking completely the other way and looking off the secondary before going to his primary target.
Yeah.
Brock Osweiler frustrates me beyond belief in the fact that it seems to me to be so simple, yet it seems to be so challenging for him. Do you see that?
Yeah. I think it's – I don't know if it's – well, now you got a guy like Kirk Cousins who is more comfortable in his scheme with running Jay Gruden's his offense. But I just don't know if Brock Osweiler is to that point yet that he's comfortable with the scheme of the other BO, Bill O'Brien. You know what I mean? I don't think yet he's gotten comfortable in all that he can do, all that he can't do, the ins and outs of the route running, the protection plan, everything. I think when you look at it as a whole, he hasn't grasped the entire offense. And you have to give him time or we continue to complain about it. We can't, and it's getting hard, you know, because I would rather not complain about it. Mm-hmm. But it's like when it's not getting any better, you say, oh, well, what's going on? But right now I look forward to the offseason because I look forward to seeing if he's going to get better. I think next year is going to be the big telltale. If he comes out the first game of the season and he's doing the same things he's doing now, not looking guys off or waiting to see if a guy runs the right route before he throws it, that's when I say, you know, Houston, we have a problem.
That's assuming that everybody's still in those positions too, right? Because, I mean, depending on how this season plays out, look, things could be totally different too.
They aren't firing Bill O'Brien.
No, well, I mean, I've said all along he's on the hot seat, but, you know, this is another one of those games, national TV, where it's not just your local media and fans that can pick you apart. It's everybody. But I look at the scenario and I look at the situation. It's troubling if it goes bad tonight. And I really do. I feel bad for the fan base. I feel for those loyal, dedicated fans that have been through thick and thin with this team and just can't find a way to win because of the quarterback. You feel that, right? You played there, of course.
I played there. I've been places here where we had no quarterback outside of when Shabby was doing his thing, and I've been places that had a quarterback with Phillip, where it was the greatest thing ever to go into every game knowing we have a shot to win this game or we're gonna win this game because our quarterback is better than their quarterback. And I think that's the thing as a fan of the Texans, as a loyal fan for the most part and a former player, I think that's the thing you hate for regular fans, that they don't get to – there's no game where you say our quarterback's better than theirs. Our quarterback's better than theirs. We're going to win this game.
It's funny because we looked at it the other day, and based on quarterback rankings, and he was not dead last, but it was a situation where it was, would you take that quarterback over your quarterback? And in most cases, I think the answer was yes.
In most cases, the answer was yes.
And here's the thing, too, to your comment about, you know, let's see what happens next year. I'm sorry to break it to you, fans, but you have no choice. You're going to have him for at least one more year. He's under contract guaranteed for 17 next year. He's coming back. Then the rest of it's not guaranteed.
Exactly.
So that's the unfortunate scenario if it doesn't work out well between now and the end of the regular season. And or the playoffs is, unlike the ties that you could cut last year with Hoyer and or Mallett, you can't do that here. And no matter how good the rest of your team is, you may be handicapped from the get-go because he can't figure some stuff out.
Exactly. Do you think they asked him to restructure? Well, he still get his money, but you think they asked him to restructure his deal next year?
I think if there ever was a scenario that set itself up and lend itself to doing something like that, it would be this because, look, they were the ones that have taken the most loss in making the investment. He has to appreciate they made the commitment, and he has to realize, look, I'm going to get it regardless, but it may be where I can get another olive branch and maybe a little more forgiveness and leeway in the long haul.
Well, I don't think he cares about the long haul. I think he just cares about the $17 million. When you look at it, is end of the day, the team is on the hook for it. You know what I mean? And that's the crazy part is the whether or not if they gave him another $10 million up front and bought his base salary down to $7 million, would it matter anyway? You know what I mean, you're still out of that. So, I mean, it's something that it's something to be thought about as far as when it comes down to whether or not they actually keep him for another year.
So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see. I guess overall, before we wrap it up, I'll ask you two guys real quickly to each give me your prediction for tonight's game and how you see it going and how you see it playing out.
Well, I got to go with the Raiders. I think the Raiders win this game 35 to 17 or 35 to 21 at the best.
Okay, Nick?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Raiders as well. I think the altitude is going to be on the side of Oakland, on Texas.
I think the smog is what helps the Raiders.
It's a good point.
More than anything.
It's not the altitude because they both have to play in it, but Oakland can understand what smog's all about.
Because in California, we have smog, and it's bad. So I think that's one thing that they really ain't tripping about.
I hope the field doesn't factor in. I think in the kicking game, the strength of Janikowski's leg could be a big deal, as I mentioned. And I think overall, I said 31-17 Raiders, but I hope it's at least that close.
And how many times has Carr kind of just pulled them out of a situation, like put them on their back when the defense is not playing, when they had that crazy game of all those penalties? How many times has Carr just put them on the back and just win the game for him? I think Derek did it at least twice or three times this year.
He's come a long way in a short period of time, let's put it that way. And he also has a lot of great weapons around him, and he's good at letting them do as much dirty work as they have to do as well instead of trying to do it all himself. But he's shown a lot of poise, and there's no reason not to think that he's going to continue, and they're going to continue to play at the level they're playing at. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, we hope we're wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But we'll talk about it regardless tomorrow. Trav, because of the fact that it is a short week, I wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, brother.
I know that we'll talk several times between now and the end of the week, but appreciate everything. Thankful for your friendship. Thankful for the fact that you have helped to contribute to what we think is a good thing going that's going to get better as we go. Barry will be in tomorrow and Wednesday, and then we'll head to Turkey Day with a couple days off. Well deserved for everybody around here. So for Travis and Nick, I'm Joel. We'll talk to you tomorrow, and we are here every day 1 to 4 on ESPN. And next, it'll be Fred, AJ, and the Blitz. Y'all have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow.
ESPN 97.5.